This is the son of PCJ.
This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bonaire in the Netherlands Antilles, directed to New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette Macquarie and Keith Perron.
Well, hello everyone. It's nice to have you with us once again on the program. Coming up today, Bob Zanotti will join us to talk about the 9 million Swiss franc cut to Swiss Info. Our propagation editor, Dan Hensley, will join us to answer a question from a listener from Germany about propagation. We have this and much more, so stay tuned. Media Network Plus, plug us in, tune us in, but never tune us out. First, here's Paulette with a look at some of the headlines from the world of radio.
The Brazilian Ministry of Communication has organized a high-level one-day seminar on digital radio on September 1, 2011, in the capital, Brasilia. The main objective of this event is to have an extensive discussion with various segments of society about digital radio. It includes what criteria should be used for the adoption of a digital standard, with emphasis on the practical implications for broadcasters and the industry. The day will begin with an overview of the issue in Brazil and abroad by Executive Secretary of the Ministry of Communications, Cesar Alvarez. There will be three panel discussions, one on the digital radio systems, one on the business models, and one on the impact on the management of radio spectrum. Representatives from the ministry, industry, and broadcasters will take part in the extensive discussions focused around which is the best digital system to use in a large country like Brazil. Cambodia's UN-backed war crimes court said today it had started contempt of court proceedings against Voice of America Khmer for revealing confidential information about a new Khmer Rouge case. The move comes after the VOA posted an article and video on its website describing prosecution allegations of mass killings and other atrocities by three mid-level cadres during the regime's 1975-79 rule. The website cited a document obtained by a source close to the court. VOA Khmer on 10 August 2011 quoted verbatim from a confidential document and even showed that document on a video, said the two judges who are still investigating the claims in the court's fourth and final case. The news service chief Chris Deshurd refused to comment directly on the court action but said, VOA Khmer supports the work of the tribunal and helps inform the Cambodian public by reporting about the court's work. He added that VOA's role was to serve Cambodian citizens who deserve and are well served by objective and quality news reporting about issues and topics that impact and affect their daily lives. This marks the first time judges have followed through on warnings to launch contempt proceedings following numerous leaks to the media. Their terse statement, however, failed to clarify if action was being taken against the journalist, the editor, or the producer of the piece, all of whom are understood to be in Washington, D.C. An illegal private radio station broadcasting medicine ads and vulgar content in northwest China's Shanxi province was shut down by local authorities on Wednesday. Four people running the radio station have been detained. The station, which covered most of the Xi'an urban area, was the first private radio station busted in the city, said Shanxi Radio Administration Bureau. Under Chinese law, it's illegal to own a private radio station. After several tests, we found a transmitter on the roof of a 24-floor high-rise in a residential complex and caught four workers, said Liu Xiaobing, deputy head with a monitoring station of the Radio Administration Bureau in Xi'an. I know it's illegal to set up radio stations on my own, but I just wanted to have a try for fun, said one of the suspects, surnamed Sui. Egyptian TV personality Shahira Amin has told The Guardian that corruption and censorship are worse today than under Mubarak. She quit Egyptian State TV on February 3rd at the height of the political unrest and mass protests in the Middle East. At the time of her resignation, there was optimism in Egypt and the West that the country's corrupt and censored media would be reformed. Following demonstrations from media workers and a shift in news coverage after the revolution, when protesters were transformed from thugs to heroes, it seemed that the country's state media were becoming more open. Ms. Amin, however, believes they have gone backwards. The army is in complete control. They have simply replaced Mubarak, and they are even more intimidating. People who use social media in China risk having their accounts suspended for a month if they spread unfounded rumors, authorities have warned. More than 200 million users of Weibo, a Chinese equivalent to Twitter, recently received a message from Chinese authorities detailing the suspension of two microbloggers alleged to have spread false rumors. Jeremy Goldcorn, the founder of the Beijing-based Danwei website, told Connect Asia that authorities had been monitoring online activity more closely since the Arab uprisings. An apparent attempt to start a similar Jasmine revolution in China seemed to have spooked the authorities, he said. Special thanks goes to Andy Sennett at the Radio Netherlands Worldwide Media Network blog for the material used. You can check them out at http://blogs.rnw.nl/media network, or you can find a link for them at pcjmedia.com.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, switzerlandinsound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs. Switzerlandinsound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.
Well, for those who may be too young to remember, that was the Swiss Radio International interval signal, which vanished from the shortwave bands when SRI became Swiss Info, a text-based news and information service about Switzerland. The board of directors of the Swiss Broadcasting Corporation, Swiss Info's parent company, accepted on the 28th of June a new strategic plan for Swiss Info. The online service will now focus mainly on readers abroad interested in Switzerland, as well as the Swiss abroad. Swiss Info will offer background information on Swiss politics, economy, culture, and social affairs in 10 languages, including Russian in 2013. Editorial processes will be reorganized. The yearly cost for the news mandate abroad will be cut by 9 million Swiss francs. With the reorganization, Swiss Info will lose 40 jobs of its 126 full-time positions. Around two-thirds of the losses will be accounted for by early retirements and transfers to other SBC units. For the remainder, redundancies will be necessary and a social plan will be implemented. Swiss Info will remain as a SBC unit in Bern. The annual savings will be shared between the SBC and the federal government. Joining us now on the line is Bob Zanotti, Media Network Plus's media commentator, for a closer look at the cuts and the switch from radio to text. Swiss Info was set up after Swiss Radio International went off the air. What was the reason for setting up the service?
Well, it was technically a transitionary measure. I'll try to be concise about this, but the story is rather contorted and rather complicated. Let's start with the old traditional shortwave service, Swiss Radio International. Everybody knows about that. Well, basically, in the late 90s, they had the notion that the internet was up and coming and we should have a presence. We, Swiss Radio International, should have a presence on the internet as well. And at the time, Swiss Radio International was still broadcasting on shortwave. And the early thinking was that the internet platform hadn't been named at the time, what is now Swiss Info, would be a supplement basically to the shortwave. And then slowly but surely, to cut to the chase here and to cut a long story short, it was decided that shortwave was just too expensive. The listenership was going down. We've been through this before, Keith. We know the story, and it's repeated itself over and over, yada, yada, yada. And so in any case, what was Swiss Radio International slowly but surely decided to put all of its eggs in the internet basket. And what was technically called in the transitionary period SRI Swiss Info in 2004, Swiss Radio International ceased all shortwave broadcasting, and the only thing left was the Swiss Info internet platform.
Did anybody raise alarm with this? Because something that I was told by a listener that you probably know, Victor Gunatelica, he said me that when an international broadcaster goes to the internet, why would he listen on the internet? Because on the internet, he listens to so many other things.
Well, that's a good point. And I don't know whether to say that in the specific case of SRI Swiss Info, we were sold a bill of goods, but it seems so. In hindsight, I can remember discussions with the pro-internet people, as I say, assuring us that we could continue doing radio. This was just the new way to do it, the new medium. Well, the history speaks for itself. And frankly, and this is my personal value judgment, the audio that's on Swiss Info, frankly, I wouldn't want to listen to. It's not very interesting. So we're stuck with a text-based website only. What happened? I think what happened is what happened to me. I was the generation of broadcasters at Swiss Radio International who were broadcasters. We were professional, experienced radio people. We made and did radio programs. Well, as the Swiss Info transition came, it was decided by somebody up there somewhere, upstairs, that people like us were redundant, costing them a lot of money, and probably even at that time they knew that the services of radio people would not be necessary after 2004. So they got rid of us, basically. That's what happened to me back in 2001. And euphemistically, we were early retired. So what this amounted to was that the only people left, by and large, were new people who came in with no broadcasting experience, very largely, to a large extent, beginners, people looking to enhance their CVs by a stint at Swiss Info in Bern, and no background whatsoever in broadcasting. So it's not... in a way, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you get rid of all the broadcasters, what's left? Text journalists, and that's what we have today.
Now, Swiss Info has had a substantial cut made. Is this just, say, the calm before the storm? Is there a plan in the future to completely do away with Swiss Info?
That's entirely possible. Whether there's a plan, whether it will simply happen, I don't know, but I think you might be onto something there, Keith. I can tell you this, that the Swiss Broadcasting Corporation had its axes ready for Swiss Radio International and Swiss Info ready a long time ago. And it was only through the intervention, largely, of the Secretariat for the Swiss Abroad and some lobbying with Swiss parliamentarians that Swiss Info was rescued at all. Insiders I know, and from what I've been hearing locally here, speculated and reported quite clearly that they expected Swiss Info could possibly be axed entirely in the last review by the Swiss federal government, which is trying to save money everywhere. And there was an initial suggestion by the Swiss government that it end all financing for Swiss Info. That didn't get through thanks to parliamentarians intervening. Now, how long this state of affairs will continue, I don't know. It's entirely possible that this is an intermediate or transitionary phase, that slowly but surely the service may eventually wind down and be eliminated. But for the time being, at least for the next couple of years, the service will be maintained. I understand that there will be a consolidation of national language services with other Swiss Broadcasting Corporation internet platforms. This is logical because they have a common and parallel effort. This country speaks German, French, Italian, and Romansh. So why, one might ask, should there be a duplication or parallel service for all of these national services when the national networks already have them? So I would say the future of the national languages is quite uncertain here. My own guess is that key world and politically important or sensitive languages like English, Arabic, Chinese, Japanese, I'm not sure, certainly Spanish, and now Russian will probably eventually become the core effort. But how long that will stay afloat, I can't say at this point.
What was the difference in budget, let's say, between Swiss Radio International and Swiss Info? Was it substantial?
Well, it was essentially the same, and I can't tell you with authority exactly what the budget is right now. I saw the figure recently. Honestly, Keith, I forget what it was, and I don't want to give you wrong information. And with the rate of exchange at the moment, it's foolhardy to try to give an impression expressed in dollars or something, because the franc is up and down. Actually, it's up right now, so it doesn't mean too much. Basically, the original Swiss Radio International budget was transferred more or less one-to-one to the Swiss Info operation. Now, we have to be careful here. I'm talking about the operating budget paying for the journalists and the editorial infrastructure. Years ago, when Swiss Radio International was operating, the Swiss Broadcasting Corporation also had to pay for transmitter time, which it doesn't have to do now. I think this is one of the reasons why the cut in the budget of 33% is probably not that disastrous, because a lot of the money used to be used for broadcast facilities, which no longer are necessary. As we know, the internet is pretty cheap to operate. The editorial infrastructure does cost money. This is an expensive country. Salaries are good. And that's basically where the money is going. But, you know, here, from a professional point of view, we have a discussion which presents itself, and that is what Swiss Info is actually doing. Now, in my day, I remember when I started at SRI, which was the SBC, European and Overseas Services, back in the 1970 when I started, our operating budget, our annual operating budget for the whole shooting match was, I believe, 7 million francs, 8 million francs, which covered all of our expenses, journalists, production, transmitters, everything else, to my knowledge. And now, I mean, then it went up to 18 million. And now I believe, and please, I hate as a journalist to give wrong information. I have a figure of something like 28 million francs in my mind. But the question is, what are they doing for it? And here I get a bit bitter as an SRI veteran. In my day, you know, we got out there. We were in cars. We were going all over the country. Every day somebody was on the road reporting live from somewhere, doing reports, reportages, interviews, and bringing it back and getting it on the air. We were a radio station operating 24 hours a day. And now I get a bit bitter. I get very bitter, as a matter of fact, and so do my contemporary colleagues of my day, when we look at Swiss Info today and realize that basically all they are is a translating agency. They sit there in their ivory tower on Giacomettistrasse 1 in Bern. They don't go anywhere. They just sit and translate other people's work. And they're more or less just a text agency. And personally, and I have to be careful here. I know things have become more expensive over the years. You know, I'm not senile. I know that things have changed. But really, I won't say they're not getting value for money. I think it is justified to pose the question, are we getting value for money for what we're doing? That's an open question.
Bob Zanotti, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Oh, always a pleasure, Keith.
A couple of weeks ago, we received a letter from Christoph Scheckmann, a listener in Germany who listens to us on the World Radio Network. Now, he's 22 years old, he's a university student, and he just started listening to international radio, but mainly on satellite. He had just listened to the show and sent us a question that I think most of you who know nothing about international broadcasting would ask. The three questions that he sent, because it's not just one, are: what is propagation, how does it work, and how is it measured? Well, joining us now is our propagation editor, Dan Hensley from Shortwave America. Dan, how about you begin right away by answering this question?
Well, Keith and Christoph, propagation is measured several ways, but what it is it is the interaction between the different layers of the Earth ionized by the sun, and we need sunspots for that. We use what's called a 10-point centimeter radio flux and planetary A index and a largest KP index. And those are different measures for what the propagation is doing and how it's being absorbed and how radio waves are expected to behave in different layers of the atmosphere. We have the D layer, we have the E layer, and we have the F1 and F2 layers. And at night, the F1 and F2 layers actually combine, especially under ideal ionization conditions. They combine into one, and that is the portion of the atmosphere used by HF and shortwave frequencies the most. Now, one other thing that can happen with less than ideal propagation conditions is that you can get tropospheric ducting, which happens just above the or below the stratosphere under different types of weather conditions on the Earth here, depending on what's happening. And there is just too much to go into here and now about that. There's a wonderful resource out here called hfradio.org, and it's run by amateur operator NW7US, who's also a musician, by the way. He does great work on his site. As a matter of fact, I use some of his information for my report and learn some things from studying his site. So you can go there to hfradio.org, and you can just see the wealth of information he has there, including a way to track shortwave frequency usage. So it's just a great site. You can learn a lot there.
Now, here's another question, which he didn't ask, but I know he's probably thinking it, as well as some others. Does propagation also affect, say, satellite transmissions or even domestic broadcasting, let's say like AM or FM?
Oh, absolutely, especially if you have a major solar flare that heads towards the Earth, such as what we saw earlier on in, July. I think we had a major flare, and it wiped everything out. We use what's called minimum usable frequency range and maximum usable frequency range, oftentimes referred to as the MUF, and that is a way of measuring which portion of every band from frequency to frequency that can be used effectively under the given conditions of that time. So there are different ways of measuring that, which you can actually read in the ARRL license instruction manuals. It's all in there. Even if you didn't plan on getting a license, again, you can use hfradio.org for that as well, and that'll tell you a little bit. There is IW5EDI, I believe, has a site. He's an operator from Italy, and he explains some things there about propagation as well. So you could have a solar flare, and if it affects that range of maximum and minimum usable frequency range, it can affect satellite, it can affect AM, it can affect FM. Amateur operators have known at times where you can be on 2-meter FM, which is 144 through 148, and sometimes under the worst of conditions, you can't even get down the street. But there are other times where you can be sitting at the radio and operate. I know it's happened to me where on 5 watts, I've had an HT outside, point that rubber duck towards the ground. I've been able to hit stations as far away north from me as up in Wisconsin. Now, my signal received through the repeater on that end on 2 meters wasn't the best, but we were able to ensue a 5-minute conversation with each other, even if we had to repeat transmissions back and forth, but it was understandable between us for the most part. So it's a really magic thing, and it can be unpredictable, just like our everyday weather here on Earth. You can get a forecast, and then it can change even after the forecast is made. Even the most experienced person can make a forecast, and it can just change on you, and that's just the nature of how propagation and weather itself works, because it is a part of space weather. You know, NASA has a space weather site that will tell you a little bit about these things as well.
Well, there, Christoph. Hopefully Dan answered your question. Keep the questions coming. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. Dan, before we let you go, what can we expect over the next few days?
On September 3rd, we have a 10.7-centimeter radio flux predicted of 102, a planetary A index of 8, and a largest KP index of 3. On September 4th, 10.7-centimeter flux predicted of 102, A index of 10, largest KP index of 3. On September 5th, we have a 10.7-centimeter flux predicted of 100, A index of 10, and a largest KP index of 3. On September 6th, 10.7-centimeter is predicted for 92, A index of 5, KP index of 2. On September 7th, we have a predicted 10.7-centimeter flux of 86, A index of 7, and a KP index of 2. On September 8th, we have a 10.7-centimeter flux predicted of 85, A index of 5, and a KP index of 2. On September 9th, we have a 10.7-centimeter radio flux predicted for 85, A index of 5, and KP index of 2. The A index is not looking good this week, with preferred numbers exceeding 7 for the first three forecast days. September 6th, 8th, and 9th are the best A index days. We have a bad K index September 3rd, 4th, and 5th. The next three forecast days are the best for the K index. Some recent sunspots may very well help propagation some in the minimum to moderate range. Sunspots 1279, 1277, 1280, and 1271 have been seen recently, with 1279 and 1277 being the most recent as of August 28th. The sunspot pattern over the solar cycle shows that sunspots have been short-lived, resulting in solar flares. Luckily, none of the recent flares have affected our planet.
All right, Dan, thank you very much, and hopefully now that propagation report is a little bit more understandable for those who don't know anything about it. Anyway, with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the program. Just a quick program note, next week, our special guest will be Jeff White to talk about the upcoming HFCC conference, which will be for the first time taking place in the United States. If you wish to listen to this program again or download all past editions of the program, visit our website, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. And our email once again is mnp@pcjmedia.com. So on behalf of the team, I'm Keith Perron saying so long, take care, and best 73s.